You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America, as well as RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 216 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Supersensible Impulses in the Historical Development of Humanity. This is translated by Paul King. I believe there are 8 lectures. Let me double check. Yes, 8 lectures. And this is Lecture 2 given in Dornach on the 17th of September, 1922. Today I should like to continue yesterday's discussion by bringing it even closer to human beings themselves. As you can well imagine, what one tries to bring in a presentation of this kind is inwardly so rich and varied that any presentation, like the one yesterday, which covers such a broad sweep of subject matter, can only look at the subject from a single point of view, and that we can only get a feeling for what is really intended in such a presentation by means of descriptions from many different sides. When we look at the human head, we must clearly realize that this head formation does not only involve the head we see externally, with its boundary below at the neck, but also the processes, the inner processes of organs taking place in the human head. As in quotes, head processes, they are predominantly in the head, but they extend over the whole organism. Thus the head system is essentially to be found in the whole human being, but reveals itself outwardly, predominantly, in the head. It is the same with the chest system, which chiefly comprises respiration and the circulation of the blood. This system also extends into the head system, as well as into the metabolic and limb system. Although, when looking at the human being, we can speak of him in a way that keeps the various systems apart, we need to be clear how in the human being as a whole they play into each other. When we look at this head system, we find that during the passage through the spiritual world between death and a new birth, the metamorphoses it demonstrates are completely different from those of the other parts of the human organism. What we actually have in the head is an image of the cosmos formed as spirit seed by an activity such as the one I described yesterday and on the days before that. In the human head, we have an image of something universal that is contracted and filled out with material existence. If we were able to study the human head, not with a physically produced microscope, but with magnifying capacities of a soul spiritual nature, we should find the whole cosmos reproduced there in its physical, etheric, astral, and I capital structure. We do indeed bear this whole cosmos in ourselves, and most especially in our head system. And what is most applicable to the head system is that between death and a new birth, in union with higher spiritual beings of the upper hierarchies, the human being works on what finds its continued development in human heredity, what, in a certain sense, once it has been brought to a particular point by the human being himself in connection with the beings of the higher hierarchies in the spiritual world, falls into the physical world, and after conception continues its development in the maternal organism. What we find there as head formation has indeed arisen out of the cosmos. Through the work done on it by the human being, it finally attains an astral condition in which it comes down to earth. There, it continues to exist from the period before conception to the condition of actual physical development, so that what now remains of the human being is later clothed with an etheric body, but only after it has first divested itself of the germ of the physical body at the spiritual level. and been able to connect with this spirit seed once more, which has now become physical. Now the fact is that while we are awake, we continue on a micro level what we accomplished on a grand universal scale in connection with divine spiritual beings between death and rebirth. The activity carried out here goes on behind our usual human consciousness, as it were. I'd like to show this in a diagram. When we look at the head of a person who is functioning normally, spiritual perception shows the following. When we are awake, when, while awake, we receive impressions of the external world in our head, what goes on in our consciousness is everything that lives in our sense perception. I'd like to characterize what is going on in our sense perception by first drawing the eye, E-Y-E, the nose, from which we get impressions of smell, the palate and mouth, where sensations of taste occur. The area drawn in red is meant to stand schematically for what people experience in ordinary consciousness. See drawing. But in the world of things going on in people, this is not all that is happening. You know that in a great variety of ways the brain is organized into different areas. I will indicate this in the diagram. What is organized and integrated in this way in the brain is actually an image of the whole universe. It is the whole universe contracted into a miniature and clothed in earthly substances. Because this brain, in its I component, capital, in its astral and etheric components, is then clothed in physical earthly matter, the earth with its forces and constituents exercises an influence on this part of the human being. While our sense perception is going on, while colors flow into us and are formed inside us into mental images, while sound stimuli vibrate through the human organism, and by the design of our organ of hearing are turned into mental perceptions of hearing, while something similar is happening with our perceptions of taste, smell, and touch, while, in other words, this whole waking experience is received as the stimuli coming from the external physical sense perceptible world, it is all living as a force in the unconscious parts of the human head system. And while we are perceiving a color, hearing a sound, or having a perception of taste, we are unconsciously working on creating a copy, an image, of how, let's say, Jupiter stands in relation to the Sun, or to Mars. We make a copy of a cosmic relationship in our own interior. Throughout our whole waking life, something is happening which we carry out behind our ordinary consciousness, the creating of images of cosmic activity. What is carried out there behind ordinary consciousness is nothing less than the lingering reverberation of what we undergo cosmically between death and a new birth or conception. We went through it there on the macro scale of the universe. We went through it there spiritually, undeterred by earthly matter. There we did not need to extract earthly matter in subtle form, or wind around axes and spiraling lines and so on. There we accomplished something in a spiritual substance. There we were accompanied in our work by the divine spiritual powers of the highest hierarchies. What we accomplish there in association with them, we carry out here in an unconscious way by turning outward to the sense perceptions in our brain, by reflecting in an earthly way with earthly substances what we accomplished in a spiritual way out there in the cosmos with spiritual beings. In this activity, we bring our pre-earthly life into our earthly life, right into the functioning of our body. What we see in colors, hear in sounds, smell in scents, is there for us during our earth existence. What is going on in the background are thoughts that have an etheric liveliness, that only have their physical expression in the material substance of the brain. The essential thing is what is weaving etherically in the most subtle matter in the brain. Living thoughts are weaving there. Our thoughts are only reflected images that are formed using this inner cosmos, where what we receive from outside rays back, and then we become conscious of it. But behind the level of memory, what I have just described is going on. There doesn't need to be anything going on behind an ordinary mirror, but behind the mirror that, by means of the brain, reflects back our abstract thoughts for our consciousness, an entire cosmic existence is reflected in miniature in every human being. And these living thoughts produced by us are the same for the third hierarchy, for the hierarchy of the angeloi, archangeloi, and archai, as our abstractly reflecting thoughts are for us. Behind our consciousness, the third hierarchy unfolds its activity through the condition of our humanness. There, the beings of the archai, archangeloi, and angeloi, do what has to be done and can only be done because humanity has been placed into the cosmos and on the earth. In the structuring of our brain, we do not only create a mirror reflecting abstract ideas in our ordinary earthly consciousness, but something takes place in our heads, which the hierarchy of angeloi, archangeloi, and archai have to accomplish on earth and through earth existence. This is a process that is just as much a part of earthly existence as any other. We can characterize earthly life by saying that one thing or another happens through minerals. Through plants, there is blossoming and the bearing of fruits. Something else happens through animals. What happens through human beings is that the angeloi, archangeloi, and archai pour out their activity into the spiritual atmosphere of the earth. This happens, however, via the subconscious activity of the human head system. But there is more to earthly existence than plants flowering and animals roaming. Earthly existence extends beyond this into a spiritual existence. Above and beyond the plants, above the animals, above human beings, there is an activity of the angelic world, of the spiritual world, of the third hierarchy. And this activity is possible due to the human head. Yesterday we discussed how above the plant growing out of the earth, there is an astral element. Above the plant, we have an astral configuration, a spiritual element that is higher than the blossom itself. Likewise, the activity in the human head extends further, into the spiritual. And when we look to see where it extends to, we find the activity of the beings of the third hierarchy in their association with earthly existence. But this activity has another very profound significance in cosmic evolution. Behind human beings' own weaving on the earth, behind what human beings have to do in the functioning of their own organs without being aware of it, the beings of the third hierarchy are their helpers. In earthly existence, people die. We have looked at dying and tried to understand it. What dying is for human beings is, for the beings of the third hierarchy, a diving down into human nature. If they only had this submersion into human nature, their consciousness would fade. They would lose their essential nature. In a certain sense, they have to nourish their essential nature again and again. Nourishment from cosmic substance has to be given to the essential nature of these creatures of the third hierarchy. Now, what is woven behind human consciousness, as I said, are predominantly formations of an etheric nature. Even during our earthly existence, the boundary between internal human ether and external cosmic ether is not so sharply defined as to prevent what is set in motion in human thoughts as human work in the brain behind conscious thoughts from constantly vibrating out into the cosmic ether. All around their heads, people are actually continuously surrounded by vibrations that are propagated out into the cosmic ether by the head activity, carried out in association with the beings of the third hierarchy. And when a person passes through the portal of death, things are as I described yesterday. Head activity is the first thing to fall away, and this also applies to its etheric element. But this means in reality that what happens in the head, in the unconscious, is the first thing to disperse into the cosmic ether, and does so more rapidly. Everything that is brought about in this way by the human being leads to formations that take shape in the cosmic ether, and it is from these that the beings of the third hierarchy are nourished. Thus, on the one hand, the beings of the third hierarchy are the helpers of human beings with respect to the human head system. And on the other hand, through what goes on within this head system, they themselves evolve further. Because during their earthly existence, human beings are woven into earthly evolution, the beings of the third hierarchy also come into connection through them with earth existence. These beings of the third hierarchy would otherwise belong to a world from which they could have no connection with earth existence at all. But they have to draw their spiritual nourishment from earthly existence in the way described. So the human being is involved in a cosmic activity mediated by these third hierarchy beings. In a certain sense, this cosmic activity passes through our being. Among the higher beings, immediately above man, these beings of the third hierarchy are the least powerful. They could not transform what vibrates out from man into the cosmos and has to become their spiritual nourishment if this was completely alien to their nature. The situation, therefore, is that as little as possible of what the human being is in the rest of his nature should be mixed in with the activity that arises by means of the human head system. Our thoughts remain logical, even if, with regard to morality, a person accumulates a great deal of evil in life. Our thoughts remain cool with regard to other people. They remain cool to the extent that they can become the nourishment we have mentioned for higher beings. If everything we have in our emotions were also transferred into the living thoughts that go on behind our consciousness, the angels, archangels, and so on would not be in a position to absorb them. This would not be a food this hierarchy could use. Whether we are a moral person or an immoral one is certainly relevant in our normally reflected thoughts. But if I now localize the matter, what I can only do in rough outline, then what goes on toward the back of our head behind ordinary consciousness is something that remains innocent, so to speak, remains untouched by our moral aberrations. These human moral aberrations only exert influence on the cosmic ether and on cosmic astrality to the extent that the human soul element is associated with the respiratory system, with the circulatory system of the blood. In a certain sense, the head is a pure image of the cosmos. And what, during our earthly life, exists behind our ordinary consciousness as an image of universal cosmic activity, where worlds are continuously being formed and continuously destroying themselves, what goes on there is present with a certain purity as compared with the rest of our human nature. But it is nevertheless the case that if you could turn your eyes backward and become spiritually sighted, and these eyes that are turned back in their sockets and have become spiritually clairvoyant could look back into the interior cavity of the cranium, they would see stars continuously lighting up, stars related to one another in movement, a world of fixed stars. A whole cosmos in miniature would become visible. Things are different in the human chest system from how they are in the head system, where breathing and blood circulation, as the rhythmic aspect of our being, take place. There is indeed also an image of the cosmos, but earthly conditions exert a far greater influence here. To a far greater degree, they change what plays in as the image of the cosmos. If, in the functioning of our lungs, we were able to turn ourselves around, as it were, and were able to see not what is clothed in earthly matter, but the etheric and astral constituents of this, we would be able to see what is happening in the interior of the lung as a star, as a planet, as a world of sun and moon. But earthly conditions are constantly playing into this inner existence. Here, the earth has a far greater influence. We need to bear in mind that what works into the head system directly, and directly into the formations I have just described, is something that is just as subtle as what the eyes make of the world of color, what is made of the world of sound through the body. This integrates itself into the cosmic activity. And what intrudes into this is what is brought about by the rest of the organism in its breathing, in the blood that is also functioning in the brain. This is intruding matter that fills out the head system. But the configuration, the inner sculpture that is at work there in the head system, is a thorough image of the cosmos. There, the earth has no influence. The situation is completely different in the chest system. The chest system takes in air and changes it. This is something in our immediate earthly surroundings, something that does not enter the human organism in such a subtle way as that which the eyes make out of color. The air we breathe is coarser than the colorful light that enters our organism. This coarser breath, therefore, has a far stronger, a more altering influence on everything in the chest system that is an image of cosmic processes. And even more so when we look at the blood. All our food is involved in our blood circulation. First, it is ingested as food, transformed by digestive processes, and released into the circulating blood. When blood goes into the head, it does so in an extraordinarily rarefied condition, a condition which the intimations of ancient clairvoyance rightly called a phosphorus condition. This is an extraordinarily refined state. Here the image of cosmic activity has power over matter, so that matter is unable to unfold its own forces. If a salt of some kind enters the brain and wants to develop its own forces there, it is, in quotes, drowned out, overwhelmed by the processes and activity exercised by the image of the cosmos, rather than in the thicker blood circulation that takes place in the organs of the chest. In the chest organs, the influence coming in from the human being is far greater. The image of the cosmos there undergoes a far stronger change. Consequently, when one looks clairvoyantly at the human chest system, it appears in the way I can roughly illustrate as follows, and there's a diagram. We see here how, when we inhale, an image of the cosmos lights up. In the brain, we really see a whole cosmos at play. For the brain, this is only interrupted in our sleep life. In the chest, sleep life doesn't interrupt anything, but the whole thing interrupts itself continuously. Seen with spiritual sight, the chest system shows stars, also star movements, but distorted toward the back and becoming indistinct toward the front. The cosmos is also reflected, in a certain sense, in people's chest, insofar as there are processes on our earth that are completely dependent on the regular course of the months in the year, according to which the plants come up and die down again, There is regularity here. We find expressed in plant forms the spiral courses I described earlier. There is a mineral tendency in this regularity, which to be sure stretches out over long periods, but which in a certain way also takes place in cosmic regularity. In the air currents moving over the earth, certain changes occur, which we can observe, for example, in the metamorphoses of the weather over the course of the year. But into this there falls the irregularity of cloud formation, the real changeability of the weather. Into this there falls the moods of meteorology. The moods of meteorology intrude into the cosmic element. Thus in the human chest, in its connection with the back, there is a distorted cosmos. The impression this makes is as though we were to take the surrounding cosmos with us into the night, and then a giant tugged at it from one side, and another giant tugged at it from the other side, so that instead of a rounded cosmos, we get an elongated barrel shape, somewhat thicker in the middle. This is how the cosmos appears to spiritual sight toward the back. And toward the front, it appears as though thrown into confusion. Just as weather conditions over the surface of the earth are ever changing, so the cosmos toward our front appears confused. The way it works as a whole is that the cosmos is lighting up at one moment and fading away the next. It lights up when we breathe in and disappears when we breathe out. Just as the human being brings about physical processes through respiration, so inhalation causes the lighting up of the distorted cosmos, and exhalation causes a darkening of the distorted cosmos once more. The Indian yogi tried in his yoga exercises to experience this lighting up and fading away of the distorted cosmos, and he endeavored thereby to reveal the real structure of the cosmos by permeating what he perceived in this way, through enlivening his breath to the point where it enabled him to perceive this inner distorted cosmos, with what he was then able to determine through contemplation. Thus, as chest beings, we experience the cosmos a second time, but as though in a struggle with chaos. And we also experience the cosmos a third time, this time in a form that actually seems completely indistinct, for that is the way it is integrated into our metabolic and limb system. In this system, we can barely make out to what extent what is incorporated here astrally and in relation to the I, capital, has emerged from the cosmos. For this reason, in the lectures I have given here, I have had to call what is incorporated in this system embryonic, for it is actually a cosmos in a state of becoming. The situation here is that only when we move our limbs or when our metabolism is active does what appears as a cosmos in the making relate in a similar way to what it submerses itself into. When I raise my leg, the spiritual element of this third human being shoots, as it were, into the leg movement and into the inner processes that arise in association with it. I would have to draw this third element in a diagram, and there's a drawing, to show that there is nothing to be seen here of the cosmos that is present so distinctly in the head system, that is present in distorted form, dampened down and obscured with respect to spiritual light, both in the respiratory system and in the limb and digestive system. Everything here is actually still as though in a cosmic nebula. We can study cosmic nebula in outer space, but with spiritual sight we can also study cosmic nebula microscopically, in miniature, when we look at the third part of the human being, the limb and metabolic system. Here we see how this nebula structure is in the stars as though wanting to arise as light, but the moment it lights up, it fades away again. We can see how this is completely overwhelmed by what issues from the earth. Here the chemical affinities, the chemical forces of the earth's substances play a significant role. How the various earthly substances relate chemically to each other is far more important during earthly life than how the things relate that we bring with us from the cosmos. And yet the human being is connected to the spiritual worlds through this part, the limb and metabolic system, of his organism as well. We are related to the spiritual worlds through our chest system because there is a spiritual hierarchy related to our chest system, just as there is a spiritual hierarchy related to our head system. In our head, it is the third hierarchy. In our chest system, it is the second hierarchy, the exousiae, dynamis, and curiotities. This second hierarchy develops a cosmic function by means of earthly human beings, by making use of what takes place in the human chest system. And their activity is one that is far more spiritual than the activity of the third hierarchy. The third hierarchy, through its less spiritual activity, is therefore able to bear what finally leads to images in matter. In the structure of the human head, we therefore really have a material image of the cosmos. In the chest system, we have a distortion precisely because matter does not become a faithful image of the cosmos, because it is destroyed again and again and can also be dissolved. The cosmic formation is not finished. So we have an earthly element coming into play very strongly in the head and a cosmic element in the chest system that is never finished in the human being. Something that remains cosmic, so that insofar as we breathe and have a circulation, human beings are permeated by a cosmic activity in which there works and weaves the activity of the second hierarchy. And into this the human being inserts the living, in quotes, photograph I spoke about yesterday and in the preceding lectures, which is an image of his moral and spiritual qualities. By having lungs and processes in these lungs that extend further into the functioning of respiration, by having a circulation and the gently percussive strokes of this circulation that vibrate out into the cosmic ether and even into cosmic astrality, man is woven into the activity of the second hierarchy. His being itself creates cosmic effects, and the beings of the second hierarchy integrate themselves into what is brought about cosmically through him. But the longer his life is, the more man inserts into this the living image of his moral and spiritual qualities, this elemental being, which, as I told you, is created by people during their lives. Every night, by the way, this elemental being emerges to some extent out of the person, and one can see the predominating activity exercised in it by the second hierarchy. When we are awake during the day, this elemental being goes back into the person, and the waking activity continues to permeate it with the moral and spiritual values and qualities of the individual in question. Now, what takes place in the metabolic limb system is connected with the first hierarchy. The connection here is primarily with the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. This is the system in which the human being is most physical, is most given up to physical forces. It is as though the cosmic element plays into it only nebulously. But into this quietly nebulous cosmic activity that is in him, which in its material functioning is permeated by strong, intensive chemical operations, by the elements of physics, into this activity there flames and floods and thrusts the activity of the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. For it is they who, through their spiritual power, are able to manage the toughest material element. And it will be the beings of this hierarchy who will one day transfer the earthly processes of chemistry and physics from their earthly form into their Jupiter form, as I have described in my title Occult Science. But this activity, which actually takes place in the cosmos, is subtly inscribed during our lifetime by what flashes through us from the will aspect of the soul, as I have discussed in previous lectures, and in which are to be found the quiet cosmic processes that are loosely compounded with the earthly element, and the processes of chemistry and physics that overwhelm the cosmic element. Here, see diagram 2.4, in the limb and metabolic system, the earth has full possession of the human being, if I can put it like that. In this system, during our earthly life, the earthly outweighs the cosmic. In our chest system, the cosmic is in balance with the earthly. In the head system, the cosmic is predominant. This is why the head system can only be connected with the lowest beings of the higher hierarchies. Where the earth predominates, the strongest spiritual beings are at work, the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. Because here man is more torn away from his being by the earth. And when we go through the portal of death, when our physical organism falls away, that which is only a nebulous spiritual element is absorbed into the activity of the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones, and gradually woven into them. But into this activity there sinks down what had previously taken shape in our chest system as the living image of the moral and spiritual aspect of the human being. What was previously in the stream of the middle hierarchy, if I can put it like that, now goes into the stream of the first hierarchy. It thereby gains greater intensity in the conditions of the cosmos, so that in their middle portion, human beings develop their karma as a living elemental being. This is then taken up by the stream of the first hierarchy. And while the human being is living through his life between death and a new birth, while he escapes from his karmic counter-image and ascends into the world where he can work with higher beings on the archetype of his physical organism, while the human being experiences all this, which he finds once more in this image on his return, something else is happening. During the period in which the human being leaves the soul world and abides in spirit land, the living image of the destiny he himself has created is transferred back from the beings of the highest hierarchy, the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones, to the second hierarchy, and finally passed on to the third hierarchy, to the angeloi, archangeloi, and archai. And when the human being enters into earthly life once more, it, this image, is incorporated into what plays between the third hierarchy of angeloi, archangeloi, and archai, and his head system. Everything the human being created through his earthly being and handed over to the cosmos after death, everything the human being developed because he has a material organism governed by earthly forces and which he had to give to the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones, everything he had to let stream into the cosmos in this way, this indeed he receives once more via the path by which the angeloi, archangeloi, and archai work through his head system in a new life on earth. The human being gives to the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones the destiny that he himself has caused, and receives it back from the angeloi, archangeloi, and archai. They carry it into the activity that he carries out in a new life on earth. In this way, in his new earthly destiny, he receives from the third hierarchy that which he had passed on to the first hierarchy when leaving his last life. So you see that we understand the universe as a whole only when we place the context in which our senses hear, can perceive, and our intellect can think into the greater context that reveals itself to real sight. For there it is not only growing plants that appear, not only water in cloud formations, in currents, not only physical stars. What appears there is the whole cosmos in its living potency, spiritually imbued by ranks of hierarchies that engage in what is just as much an activity as physical activity is, an activity that surges and billows through this physical activity. And events take place during our existence between death and rebirth, such that our human destiny is transferred from the hands of the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones to the angeloi, archangeloi, and archai. We thereby receive what we are to experience in our new life as our destiny. What we left behind with the highest hierarchy is given back to us by the hands of the third hierarchy. And together with the third hierarchy, during our earthly life, we have, through our compensatory deeds, to integrate it once more into cosmic balance. The end of Lecture 2.